Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to arguably the best panel of the day. This is What Do Women Want? The panel, targeting a female audience. And we always have the gender disclaimer at the beginning. This is for anyone who's a fangirl at heart, regardless of your gender identity. It's for anyone who's into that stuff. Enjoyable, I know. So we have a really excellent list of panelists today, so I'm going to let each of them introduce themselves, and then we'll dig into some good questions.
I'm Brendan Fletcher. I write Gotham Academy with Becky Cloonan. I write Batgirl with Cameron Stewart, and I'm writing the upcoming Black Canary series for DC Comics.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sam Meggs. I'm an associate editor at the Mary Sue, and I wrote The Fangirl's Guide to the Galaxy, which is actually like debuting at TCAP this weekend. So.
Hi, I'm Sydney Padua. I wrote The Thrilling Adventures of Lovelace and Babbage, which is just out this week, and yeah, that's me.
My name is Sandra Bell Lundy, and I do the newspaper comic strip Between Friends with King Features.
My name is Solange Volkova. I did DramaCon in high school, and my new book, Awkward, is coming out this summer.
Okay, we are going to start with a basic definition of, I'm going to spell this out, male gaze, G-A-Z-E, because that gets confused a lot. Looks very different on paper. The concept of male gaze versus female gaze, which I think is an important component of this discussion. Does anyone here want to try and define it? Oh, by the way, Emily Ann Stenton, I'm one of the editors of Sparkle Monthly Magazine, which is a female gaze comics, prose, and audio drama serial magazine. So since this is on our about page, I can do this one. Generally, when you talk about gaze, it has a lot to do with the perception of the assumed audience. So it's not always about the gender who the gender that wrote the series, but who it's targeted to. So, for example, something that assumes the viewer is going to be male, and that a really good example is when a beautiful woman walks in the room and the camera goes up her body real slow, and they start playing like, bam, 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 that the assumption is that the person who's watching this knows it means, oh, I'm supposed to be attracted to her, right? And even though you might not be attracted to the woman, the assumption is like you are a dude looking up that woman's body, because the assumption is the male gaze. This is a man who is a straight man, clearly, who's watching this, and there's kind of like that wink, wink, nudge, nudge. This is about your experiences, guys. The default of a lot, well, especially comics, we do everything kind of slants male gaze right now. There is definitely really great representation of female gaze, but it is a minority. And obviously, female gaze is kind of the flip side of that, assuming that the audience is female. It sometimes means something like the main character is female, it's about her experiences, but it's also like for people who are familiar with like Slash, doesn't necessarily mean that it's about female characters, but there's something about it that kind of speaks to women, to that feminine experience or what women value, that sort of thing. And a lot of the time, because female gaze was specifically reactionary to male gaze, it does tend to have a lot of people pushing for a broader experience of what is the feminine and even what is the masculine, and that's kind of where a lot of Slash fiction and stuff comes in, exploring different modes of masculinity and that sort of thing, because a lot of the male gaze is limited by, especially like Hollywood, you know, it's a pretty small box there, even for dudes. So that's kind of where we're going to begin, but we'll talk a little bit about valuing the masculine story. So this is also part of male gaze versus female gaze. Valuing masculinity and kind of the feminine is sort of the other. Sometimes it's denigrated or whatever. I would like to ask each panelist to go through and talk about their experiences in this. And like, for example, if you were pitching to a publisher, or I'm sure that you've run into this at some point, talking about who you're aiming for, what kind of a story they wanted out of you. If you pitched and they said, could you change it this way? Or trying to reach this audience, like kind of any experiences you have that specifically like stand out in your mind about this, about kind of targets? You start with Brendan.
Well, I'm really, really lucky because if any of you know me out there, you know me from the work I'm doing for DC right now, probably. But before that, I was working for other publishers. The people I'm working for at DC right now, my immediate editors, are exactly who you would hope would be in control of books like Batgirl and Black Canary. They're amazing. And they want what we want. So I don't really have many difficulties there getting anything through. If there are, it's not at the immediate level that I deal with. however, before going to work for DC, I had worked for a video game publisher. And things were a bit challenging. I was writing comics for them, and there was an entire epic story being crafted with the goal of positioning a female character in a very major role that would have carried over into the video game franchise. And we weren't told not to do it because of gender reasons, but they didn't hire us back to finish the story. So we never got to the part where that character was positioned as we were hoping she would be. And so she remains dead right now. She's not dead. If any of you read it, she's not dead. We were setting her up for the heroic return. Yeah, that's my tragic story.
I mean, for me, my experience is a little bit different since I'm, like, a journalist and a commentator as opposed to someone who, like, actively pitches comics to people. But in my experience, I think we're seeing a really big change now, and I think a lot of that is due to social media. I mean, there are a lot of horrible things that happen on the internet, but social media is so useful for giving marginalized groups like women, like people of color, a voice. And the more that we're able to have a platform, you know, like the Mary Sue really clear Tumblr to say, there are so many women out there who are reading comics. Like, look, like something like 44% of the people who read comics are women. Almost half the people who go to conventions are women. Almost half of the people who play video games are women. And we're finally able to put our voices out there and be like, look, we're here. Here are our dollars. And, like, here are the things that we want to buy, so you should make them. And the cool thing about being able to interact directly with brands and publishers through social media is that they're kind of, like, forced to listen. You know, when, like, 100 million people tweet hashtag Where's Natasha at Marvel, and, you know, they can't really ignore that for a super long time because it makes them look really bad, you know? So, and I think we're starting to see that. I mean, DC's got you guys, Marvel hired Sana Amanat on the inside to, you know, push a lot of really awesome female comics forward. And it's not, sorry, I hate when people say that that's like a pandering thing because lady gays or like female-focused comics are doing really well. Ms. Marvel is their number one digital seller. Lady Thor is outselling old dude Thor. So like, it's true. It actually is happening. So I think that the more we, you know, not necessarily as creators, but as the consumer public, speak up about the things that we want and use our voices and our dollars to kind of vote that way, that they are forced to listen. That's been really cool.
So Loveless and Babbage started as a webcomic and very much my own kind of personal idiosyncratic obsessions about stuff. So I basically had no pressure from any direction. And my publisher, who was Pantheon, were, you know, they're pretty artist-centered, so they just let me do whatever I wanted, which was fantastic. I think for me, the pressure was more internal, I guess. I had to force myself to give Lovelace, I think, more interesting stories. I mean, I think I had the kind of that internal habit of making her the straight man, the good girl, the one, you know, who was sort of the one who was always right and the one who, you know, rather than just letting her, you know, get drunk and smash things, which, you know, once I let her do that, it got a lot more entertaining. So, but it was definitely an internal thing I had to fight.
That's really common. There are a lot of women that say, how do I write a good female character?
Yeah. Like,
they've done this panel a lot of shows and that's a common question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you grow up on, you know,
you grow up on the male story.
Well, actually, my strip features three women characters as the main character, and that was actually a plus for me, because when my strip is just coming, actually, it's 21st year this year, and when my editor at King Features picked it up, that was a plus. you know, he was looking for a strip that featured women. So that was actually a plus for me. Where it would be negative or work to my disadvantage at times, and not always, but there are still times in the mainstream newspaper comics that an editor will say, well, I already have a strip that's done by a woman, or I already have a strip that, even if it's from the female perspective, if he's got one perspective, it's sort of like one woman does it all, you know, one size fits all. Even though there could be two women cartoonists that are writing from a female perspective, it could be a completely different strip, different characters, different angle, different voice. But there are times when they say, well, we've got one.
I've been pretty lucky. I've never felt pushed.
You're in manga.
Yeah. I've also so far only had two editors, and both editors are very, very accepting of everything that I do. So, and yeah, manga is very versatile. They basically do not care what you do, as long as it sells, I guess. I think the only push I've ever felt was probably from myself, because, like many of us, I've grown up on male gaze stories, and that poison, once I realized it was in my mind. Like, I still remember I was discussing something with a school friend of mine, and I think I said something like, well, you know, like, girls shouldn't chase after boys. And she looked at me and said, why? And I honestly had no response to that. I realized it was something I absorbed. And it was not validated by anything that I had seen. Like, why not? Why shouldn't a girl tell a boy that she likes him, right? And that was my first understanding that there was something in my mind that I was not aware of. And, like, literally decades since then, I tried to remove that poison from my mind, and to this day, there's still remnants of it. For example, my new book, Awkward, features two teachers, science teacher and an art teacher. And the art teacher is flighty and artistic, and the science teacher is really logical. So my immediate go-to model was, of course, the science teacher is a man, and the art teacher is a woman. And it was a few sketches in when I realized that, wait, why? So, yeah, that's the pushback.
It actually ended up doing a good job. Everybody here is from, like, a very different area of the industry, which is unusual in these panels. You don't always get, like, superhero comics and journalists and web comics and Sunday strips and manga, because all these have kind of different issues, and some are more female-friendly than others. Manga is always, I mean, I'm biased, I've worked in the manga industry a long time, but it's always because of the prevalence of shoujo and jose, well, mostly shoujo, let's be honest. There's always been kind of like, you go to an anime con and it's like, there are tons of girls there. It's just tons of girls there, and there always have been. Like, Sailor Moon was one of the big breakthrough hits when it came over here. An entire generation of creators who were raised on that and had these beautiful fusions. And also, especially webcomics, which I'd like you to talk a little more, if you could, about that, Sydney, just briefly, about your experience in, like, the webcomics community, because this is sort of the future, you know, like, not just the future of comics, but it's so new compared to, like, almost 100 years of Superman, and we're finding that this is where a lot of women are going. Creators, readers, fandom, obviously. What were your experiences in webcomics specifically? I'd really like that.
Well, I mean, I started the comic in 2009. I think anyone who's familiar with Loveless and Babbage online will know it's a very, very sporadic webcomic. But for me, it was a really playful space. It's not serious. There's no rules. There's no gatekeeper. There's no... I mean, it, certainly in 2009, it was still even quite new for webcomics to be a thing, so there was no format, you know. So it, you could really be very inventive and creative in sort of any direction. And I think, I mean, in terms of audience, the comic got a lot of tech because it's about a computer. So it got a lot of tech attention, but I actually didn't have any or no serious negative stuff from being a woman doing a webcomic about tech. I get the occasional, you know, oh, lovely, should wear less clothes kind of email, or, you know, stuff like that. But no, so far it's been fantastic, and actually it's, you know, it's a lovely space for people who are interested in a very, very narrow subject.
Yeah, I was going to say, I totally agree with you. Like, this kind of goes back to my whole, like, the internet is amazing thing. But, like, traditionally, if you wanted to get into, you know, video games or comic books or whatever, you would have to go through the old, like, big structures of, like, the big two or a huge publisher. And, you know, there were old white men in charge always. And if you were a girl, it was kind of hard to break into that. So now, like, everything is amazing. If you're a creator, you could just go on Tumblr and put all of your art on the internet, and then someone from DC will come and hire you, like Baz Tarr, or like you could be Kate Leth or Noelle Stevenson, who's just in here. Like, just put your stuff on the internet, and that's how people are finding like new pros. You can make your own audience. You don't need gatekeepers. You don't need any of that stuff that you used to have to worry about. And I mean, the downside of it, of course, is that a lot of it you have to do for free on your own time, and that can be really difficult. But it also, like, there's such a huge audience out there for your stuff, and they're just waiting for you to make it. Like, there's a huge appetite for punk Sailor Moon fan art. Like, there's just, like, a huge audience for it. Like, so it's really awesome to be able to say, like, just put your stuff on the internet and you'll get a book deal. Like, that's what we did. Just do it. Like, it's amazing.
I have this conversation with people at every show I'm going to now, because I'm fairly new to most people, so I'm getting the, like, well, how do you, what should I do to break in? And I say the same thing all the time. Like, there's no rules. Go out, I mean, you won't have to answer to an editor or anything. Do your art, put it out there. You don't even need to just put your art out there and hope to be hired to work on somebody else's book. Go and make your own book.
Yeah.
Do what you want, make amazing work, and you can learn how to monetize it from there. Two of my co-creators that I'm working with, three of my co-creators right now, have put stuff online, and since then won Eisner Awards for their stuff online, and turned that, like, Carl and Cameron are both here with their web comics now packaged as hardcovers that they have monetized, and they, I mean, that's a real job.
Yeah.
And it's, you don't need Marvel or DC to make comics anymore.
Yeah, stop.
Yeah, I know. What are you doing? Tell me how to get on the web.
Sandra, I'm coming back to you in a minute. Svetlana, can you talk about, you were a webcomic artist first as well? Back in the early
days, yeah. Back then, the infrastructure was not what it is right now for monetizing content on the web. You know, Patreon wasn't even a glimmer in anybody's eye. Kickstarter did not exist. I think about a year after I got online, 2 years, Scott McCloud introduced micropayments, you know, way before its time, really. So it was a disheartening experience in terms of actually making money. But in terms of community and in terms of reaching the audience that you were talking about, it was eye-opening. And I still, like, I because I do print books now and sometimes work 14-hour days to meet my deadlines, I haven't really been doing online comics, and I miss them. I miss them so much, that immediate connection between me and my audience. I put up a page, and, you know, minutes later, there's comments of people who have read it, and there's no replacing it with anything. And that was, like, my first official online publishing gig was Girl-O-Matic, which was a site that had webcomics specifically directed at the female audience. Yeah, it had a stellar lineup. Like, Hope Larson was on it, Spike Trotman was on it. Leah Hernandez, and just a bunch of amazingly talented people. I was a student just fresh out of college, and I felt weird being alongside such amazingly talented people. But yeah, I guess even back then it was already that amazing platform to just be seen, to bring stories that want to be seen, really.
Now, Sandra has been doing this longer than any of us. You actually have an online presence as well, which, you know, not everybody who does Sunday strips wants to even deal with that. So can you tell us about how that transition has been for you? Like, how different is it for me? Because you're syndicated in, what, like 10 countries?
Yeah, 10 or 12.
Okay. Yeah, so what's the difference when you have, like, a website versus, like, being in newspapers across the world? Like, how has that experience been for you, that transition?
Well, the transition, I mean, for doing the strip, there's no change. Because when I do my strips and I send them off to my syndicate, and they do the selling and they collect the monies and they handle the distribution. So I have to just, my responsibility has always just been to get my, you know, my six dailies and my one Sunday strip done. And then they sold them to the papers. And then occasionally, you know, you get other like textbooks or something will do, there'll be reprints. The thing with the web for us, because, I mean, it's definitely a transition period for newspaper comic strips. That just goes without saying almost. So my syndicate, like all syndicates, newspaper syndicates, are trying to find their place on the web. So I have my strips on the web within sort of like, it's my website, but it's connected with all the other strips that my syndicate represents. And so there's a lot of cross-referencing there. And I don't have to do any more work in terms of my strip, because the strip that appears in the Toronto Star today is the same strip that appears on my website. Where it's different now is that I'm actually starting to make money from the web. Print definitely pays more. But, I mean, it's going up. So, I mean, it's positive. And that's why, here's a shameless plug, that I self-published my book, Death of a Saleswoman. And this is the first time that I've done something like that. And that's why I'm at TCAF. I've visited TCAF, but it's my first time at TCAF as an exhibitor. But, you know, it's a learning process for us syndicated people, too, watching the web people. And the way I look at it is that I need to have merchandise on the web to supplement that web income. So I don't know if I'm explaining that properly. So, I mean, in terms of the actual strip work, it's the same. But then the social media aspect comes into it, too, because I have my Facebook page and I have to keep that updated. I'm a very bad tweeter. I'm not very good at that. I try to do Pinterest and I keep forgetting about it. And Facebook seems to be very easy, though, but such a time suck, though. So in terms of the strip work, it's the same, but there's been this added thing. I think the social media is the thing that's been the added work issue for me.
We'll go further to that. I assume all of you have interacted with like female fandom in some respect, and it might be like you wrote something that went on Tumblr 100,000 times, or it could be like somebody who came up to you at a show and it was a young woman and she had, you know, I'm sure all of you have an interesting story, either a specific anecdote or a general impression you got, like, boys have talked to me about this, girls have talked to me about that. So I would like a little impression there. If you got a good story there.
I don't know that it's a really good story, but the thing that affects me most is going to these shows and having, or even a signing. I did a free comic book day signing and having like young 10-year-old girls coming up to me with their full collection of Gotham Academy, and or even dressed up. God, I had two young ladies at Chicago C2E2 come up to me with a map that they had drawn. They were both dressed as my characters from Gotham Academy, and they had drawn me this full map, and they unfolded it on my table and took 10 minutes to show me around the map. And I was just fighting back tears the whole time. This is everything that I'm doing right now. That's the goal. And every time that happens, I feel like a major win. And it happens like at least once a year. I got it once today, and it's just like, okay, I'm done. I can go home. Very much. But also, I have to say, so these three books I'm doing feature female protagonists, and it's always extremely heartening when I get dudes coming up to me going, this is my favorite book. I don't know what you guys do with maps and all of it, but it's like, that's the best. And I'm like, buddy, you are awesome. Yeah, I finished with Superman years ago. I don't know about that guy. I don't know about him either. Stick with us.
I mean, yeah. For me, I spend 99% of my time working on the internet. So I don't know if y'all have been on the internet lately. It's not, like, the most amazing place for, like, outspoken feminist women right now in the geek world. Like, I don't know. You might have heard about this. So I spend, like, most of my time moderating, like, a garbage comment section and, like, fielding horrific tweets from, like, alligators or, like, you know what I mean? Y'all know what I'm talking about. Like, I get a lot of crap on the internet is basically what I'm saying. So whenever I get, whether it be in person or over the internet or by email, like, I got an amazing email a couple of weeks ago from a dad who had gotten, like, an advanced reader copy of Fangirl's Guide and had given it to his daughter and sent me this huge email about how she was, like, so shy and introverted and loved all this stuff and didn't know how to talk about it, and, like, the book made this huge difference to her and she felt accepted and now she knew where to find her people, and then she came up to me at C2E2. She was friends. She, like, cried at the table. And I was like, man, like you say, everything that you do is worth it for, like, that one moment. Uh-huh. So if you guys are, like, a fan of something or if you feel affected by something, like, it totally makes a difference. Like, send a tweet, send a nice Facebook. It totally makes a difference because we deal with a lot of garbage and, like, just the terrible people. But every time you hear something nice from someone, it, like, makes it all worth it. And, like, to be here in front of this room full of amazing people, dudes and girls alike, it's, like, so inspiring. Yeah, when I get dudes coming up to me, too, being like, I got one tweet the other day from a guy who was like, man, I was a horrible person and a really bad misogynist, and I've been following you and, like, the Mary Sue and stuff, like, he was like, thank you for making me, like, a better person. I'm reevaluating my choices now. And I was like, whoa. Cool. So it makes a huge difference. It makes it all worth it. All of it worth it. Yeah.
So I guess, I get a lot of girls, my comic deals specifically with a historical person, Ada Lovelace, who was the first programmer in the 1840s. Before there was a computer, there was a computer programmer. But she's a very well-known figure, and she's someone who's explicitly a role model for women. There's a lot of girls in coding initiatives named after her and so on, so I guess I feel some responsibility. But I get a ton of, yeah, girls coming up named Ada, actually. Mm-hmm. Can you make it out to Ada? But I think it's a lot of dads, giving it to their daughters. That's been a big theme and a surprising theme, kind of going around getting the book signed, is that I'm having so many dads saying, I've always wanted my daughter, you know, to know how awesome computers are, and, you know, and to see herself in this world, you know, as a player, as someone who's kind of in there messing around, as opposed to kind of the, you know, the object or the sexy one, you know, she's just in there as a character. So, yeah, I get a lot of that. That's great.
Thank you.
Amazing.
Well, I did a Google search of my name once. And some guy had posted about me that Sandra Bell Lundy should stick her head in a blender and set it on puree. But, I mean, that was years ago, and I just laughed. And mostly, though, the feedback that I get, because my strip, I say it's geared towards women, and I get what's been nice about the internet is that I find that the people who read my strip, it's almost like they're having coffee with you when they send you messages or they post on your Facebook page, and it's like it's personal, and it's I did outside of my strip actually last year. I have two kids that are now in university, and last year my daughter, my youngest, was leaving for Nova Scotia. She goes to Dalhousie, and so I was facing the empty nest, and it was kind of on my mind. I mean, my son can pop in now and then, but you know, guys don't have much at that age to say to their mother, and my daughter is going to be so far away. And I had written a series, and it was very personal. It was a graphic essay, and it ran in the newspapers, it ran in the Star and the Montreal Gazette, but I had done a four-week series every Saturday, a full page, talking about, you know, my daughter leaving and what my life was going to change. And I had a tremendous amount of email from people, and very personal, and talent. One woman telling me how, you know, she would cry at dinner time because the table, you know, there was just her and her husband there because their kids were gone. Or else somebody else saying, oh, I was really laughing at what you did today. And it really, it's a really personal experience. And it's really nice, I find, to have. And men, when men write to me usually, I always really like it when I have a man write to me, to know that men read my strip. And they usually preface their comment with, I know your strip's for women, but... and then they'll say something. So I've found that being on the internet is really nice because I get to interact with my readers much more. Mm-hmm. And it's been really positive.
I had a similar experience with when I wrote DramaCon.
With the blender?
No, I was told to die and rid the world of my art. It was on Facebook, though, and they don't take kindly to that, so like the comment got deleted almost immediately. My first book, DramaCon, was aimed specifically at girls. It was a romance manga, and my first lesson in, okay, we're not that different, was when just guys started coming up in my signing line with this little pink tome in their books. I'm like, I love this. And I was surprised, and then like, why am I surprised? You know, the story is, it's pretty universal. Like, everybody goes through these issues of, you know, just trying to get to know the other person and having the courage to do so. Like, that's, you know, boys or girls. It is, social interaction is daunting. It was daunting in high school, it is daunting in adulthood, and, I mean, eventually, hopefully it gets easier. Do we have that experience? So, like, there are things that we talk about in our work that are just, like, they transcend the whatever hormones we were assigned at birth.
Well, see, when you hit menopause, you just forget it all anyway.
Just feedback's been wonderful, and it's all a standout moment to me. Every time I get a fan letter, I'm like, oh!
That's something that I find really interesting, and I'm sure like you guys probably think, why is it like, I know people have asked this question a million times, but why is it that we think that stories about guys are universal stories and stories about girls are for girls? Like, why can't Batgirl be a universal story? Like,
I get this every day. Every day, like, oh, I'm really enjoying Batgirl. I know it's for girls, but it's like, I hate to say it, and I knew this was going to come up at some point here, but yeah. I ultimately am writing for myself all the time. I happen to be drawn to writing female protagonists. I always have been. Carl, too.
Yeah.
My illustrator on Gotham Academy and I have known each other for 30 years. We've been making comics together since we were kids. Yeah. They always feature female protagonists. And it's just, we've tried to analyze it for years. And it's, we come back to the Miyazaki thing. It's just like, oh, it's how we feel comfortable telling stories. It's the voice that we want to use. It's just how we do it well. Every time we try to do it with guys, it's kind of stinky. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, this is the response that we get all the time from guys. Like, I really like Gotham Academy, even though I know it's for girls. It's totally not for girls. It's for me.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of that has to do with precedent. And, like, this is the way the industry has always been. They're like, here's a girl series, and it's pink, and there's a girl on the cover, and she's got, you know, whatever. She's doing some sort of, like, generic superhero pose, you know, and they're like, finally. Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm sorry, that's like May.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I had this conversation with someone recently. The pink, we were talking about gender targeting. There's a newspaper in UK, I believe, which refused to review gender targeted toys in the future. And we got into talking, well, what is gender targeting? Is it just because it's pink? Because pink stereotypically is, you know, from young age is fed into us as a girl color.
And not for that long of history either. It's relatively
recent. Very recent. So it's not so much that it says that this is a book for girls, like it's written there in words. It's this. It's aimed at the stereotypical idea of girls, which may not necessarily be true, only as far as the society has thought us to be true.
And that's a big part of, that's a big part of what's so great about everybody on this panel, that we are expanding the female story. And part of it is just stop treating it like it's, like you were saying, you already have a comic by a woman, you know, like, we're good now. That we, like, and again, depending on which corner of the industry you're in, because some of them have more female stories than others, that what is it that it means to be a woman? Like, no one says there's only one way to be a man. Like, there is a lot of weird boxes there in terms of, like, again, like Hollywood or, like superhero comics and stuff. There are a lot of issues there saying, like, oh, you can't be this kind of guy, though, you know. And that's why a lot of the time when you're trying to expand the female story, it does tend to help expand the male story as well, you know, because we're all saying, like, hey, experience is more than that this has always been. And, you know, a lot of women write, again, I keep going back to Slash, but, like, especially in manga, that's, like, boys' love is humongous in Japan, and it's just women writing about queer guys. Like, tons of it, and they're writing these incredible stories, and sometimes they do it because there are certain types of stories that they feel there's so many politics if they make it a woman, but if they make it a man, they can take some of that other baggage off. There are certain, you know, if they're in a sexist structure, it's like, well, if I swap the gender, then they no longer have to think about the patriarchy all the time, because it's like, you know, take it out of the equation, or just that they're interested in men, and they want to know more about what the male story is. So we're going to do one more question down, and we're going to open for people to ask questions. But I know all of you, either explicitly or implicitly, have thought about the female audience that is reading your comic. So when you think about this female audience, how does that translate into what you create? Like, is there things that you keep in mind? Are there areas you don't want to go? Are you avoiding pink? Are you, like, is it harder? Like, are there, like, landmines that you're trying to avoid? Like, if you feel comfortable kind of talking about that, that's hard.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Luckily, the three comics that I'm working on for DC Comics that feature female protagonists also, I have female co-creators working with me. So, in the case of Batgirl, I have an extremely vocal female co-creator who is always looking out for the female gaze and making sure that we... making sure that the comic is what she wants in a lot of ways. So if Cameron and I are writing in a particular way that isn't speaking to her at all, she doesn't hesitate to let us know, and we reevaluate. And we have done on a few occasions, but usually we're all kind of on the same page, and we talk about this stuff a lot. Annie and I have been talking a lot for Black Canary, but we were kind of on the same page from day one about how the representation of that character, and that character's been, if you guys read, it's all over the map, so kind of just had to pick one and go with it, but we are in agreement on that. With Gotham Academy, I am 100% writing that for my 9-year-old niece, but for me, I'm also kind of channeling a story that Carl and I did years ago. I'm just sort of, I didn't realize it at first, but it's the same two protagonists aged down about 10 years. And so, and this was an unpublished story that we worked on for 8 years, I think. And so there's a lot of baggage that he and I are carrying forward about things that we had to say about these young ladies, and we're kind of working it out through that story. So that for me is a combination of those two things. I keep Olivia in mind when I'm writing Gotham Academy, but I'm also channeling old work that I think was also channeling Miyazaki. Not well, Totoro's my favorite movie. Has been for years. And if you go down my like top 20 list, it's littered with Ghibli movies. And they are almost exclusively female protagonists.
Yeah, I mean, for me, when I was writing Fangirl Guide, I just wanted to write the book that I wish I had had when I was 15 and, like, was in high school and was into all this weird stuff and felt like I couldn't tell anybody because, like, I'm old, but there was no internet at the time, really. And, like, you know, I just want people to be, of any age, really, to be able to pick up this book and be like, oh, I'm not alone, and, like, being who you are is the coolest thing you could possibly do. And if there are people around you who don't like it, then screw those people. There are, like, a bazillion other people out there who will like it and are as cool as you are. So that was sort of my intention when I was writing it. And but as someone who is a cultural critic, I guess you could say, I'm always really aware of the fact that I can only ever write from my own perspective. Like, I'm me, and so when I'm criticizing things, I criticize things as, like, a redheaded, short, like, queer white girl, but I'm, you know what I mean? Like, I'm super aware that I don't have the experiences that other marginalized people have, so you know, I'm in charge of contributors for the Mary Sue, so I like reaching out to other voices who can maybe give criticism from their own sort of life experience and speak to that in a more authentic way than I could, so I try to be careful about that. It's hard, but I try to be careful about that.
It's interesting what you said about people doing slash, because it avoids the whole politics of being a woman in society. I made a choice very early on in the comic. It's set in a Victorian England, but it's an alternate England. And I could have done the thing where it's like, you know, everyone's like, oh, you're a woman, or she can't do that, she's a woman, and then she triumphs, and, you know. I don't know, I guess I just got kind of sick of that stuff, because I think it gets a bit exhausting and a bit, you know, you have to be the super special person in order to do anything. So I very explicitly made a decision that it was just not ever going to be an issue in this universe. There was no such thing as people being surprised at a woman programming computers. And that's, you know, it's something that I kept, I kind of very consciously did. You know, she smokes a pipe, she's quite surly, she, you know, she's a bit sweary. There's no, you know, she can go to a bar and have a drink and it's not a thing, you know, aside from, you know, the other problems you can get into getting drunk in a bar. It was very much this liberating kind of thing that, you know, you could create a universe where it just was not an issue. That was fun.
Well, you know what? I'm really, really grateful that I've been able to have a career just getting up every day and writing comics. Even though some days writer's block comes, but so do the deadlines. So somehow you have to find a way. But I'm not writing for anybody other than myself, like you say. I mean, at the end of the day, what goes on paper is what I'm thinking about or what's happened or what's influenced me. Early on in my strip, I wrote about infertility because I had faced infertility. And I didn't write my personal story, but I had written strips that were influenced by it. I had written a series on domestic abuse because I'd had a close friend who a long time ago had experienced it, and I thought about it for quite some time because my strip is reality-based, so I wrote about it. So anything that I've written about, it's pretty much, it comes from the heart, and it comes from what I want to write, and so, I mean, really, that's a privilege to be able to do that every day. And when you get feedback from people that like it, I mean, that's just gravy. I know there's some people that my strip don't appeal to. I think my strip appeals to women, and you know, that's just what it is. That it is what it is, and makes me happy. And if it makes some readers happy, and I get to make money from it, I mean, I just couldn't ask for much more.
I also write for myself.
There's no shame in it.
I do consider my audience a lot. The fact that this book will be seen by people other than, you know, a straight white Russian girl who is suddenly Canadian, possibly soon American, and my books are fairly multicultural usually, and as a straight white Russian girl, I do need to. I realize that I'm writing from the viewpoint of an outsider. Like, even when I write stories for Americans, I'm writing from a viewpoint of an outsider because I'm a recent transplant. And I grew up in a very, very different culture than what... okay, who is Canadian here? Can I see a show of hands? Okay, then you guys have grown up with. So that's something that I always keep in mind when I write. And I do my best to do my research, but without prying, because I know, speaking from personal experience, serving as the sole ambassador of your culture to some nosy person who's like, I'm writing a book, can you tell me all about your Russian quirks? And no. So that's a big thing I consider when I create.
Just a side note, we ran this panel last year, and there was way more angry ranting. We talk about how things are getting better. They are, like, really getting better quickly now, I feel like. You know, between, like, there's death throes, so you're hearing, like, somebody screaming misogynist coming out. But last year, it was shortly after Janelle Asselin had run an open... questionnaire about have you faced sexual harassment in the comics industry, and it was flooded with rave and death threats. So it was kind of a low point in terms of, like, you know, the darkness before the dawn sort of thing. And I think it's been, like, really made a lot of steps this year for both women in comics and just acknowledging the female fan base, seeing, you know, women as valuable consumers and kind of taking their sentiments into mind, you know, like thinking about them for more than 30 seconds and. Yeah, so it does get better, guys.
And Janelle's doing great now.
Oh, yeah.
Super great, so.
Yeah, she just kickstarted an all-romance comic anthology called Fresh Romance,
yes.
Which looks awesome. So we've got 10 minutes. We'd like to open the floor if anybody has questions. Don't be shy.
No questions.
Oh, there you go.
I just started reading superhero comics because there's girls.
Yes.
And I read Ms. Marvel and I read She-Hulk, which I thought was awesome, and I wanted to know if maybe you had some other suggestions of superhero girls that we should all be reading.
Batgirl.
I'm going to second Batgirl and I'll just put the cigarette next to me. It's awesome. So she's like a... She's a computer hacker in her 20s. She's really in, like, Brooklyn. She's really cool. I'm, like, a huge Marvel comics fan, typically, so I would totally suggest Angela Asgard's Assassin. That's a comic with an awesome trans character in one of the two lead roles, which is really cool and, like, unusual for mainstream comics, so I'm really digging that one. And I would also suggest Squirrel Girl.
Yeah!
From Toronto, and I think he's at TGAP this weekend, yes?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it's, did a panel with him earlier.
Did you?
Yeah.
It's, like, actually the funniest comic I've ever read. Like, it makes me weep, and it's drawn by an awesome girl, Erica Henderson, and, like, she's got a great booty, and it's just, I don't know, just please read it. I know it sounds ridiculous, but, like, seriously, please read Squirrel Girl, and I'm, like, there are so many... Silk! Oh, my God, Silk! That was the other one I already said. Silk because she's a really cool Asian American superhero. There are not a lot of those, and she, like, I don't know, the origin story for her did a really dirty, it was horrible, but now it's being drawn by an awesome woman, and she's really, it's like basically Peter Parker's like sassy personality but put into like a sweet Chinese girl, basically. So it's awesome, so go read those three for sure. Yes.
Also, Starfire is coming out with her own series in June. I haven't read it, but I know it's Jimmy and Amanda. They're probably going to do something awesome.
And she's in a cute crop top now, and not what you think of when you think of Starfire. Don't worry about that.
I believe that there is effort being put forth to not make it a male gazey book, and cool. Starfire has always been a male gazey character.
Yeah, cool.
So we'll see. We're all hopeful that it's going to be awesome, and the creators are awesome, so... if you care about superhero stuff, I know, like, I don't want to say go out and buy this stuff, but man, they're like, these companies are putting, they're like dipping their toe in the water going, is this okay, guys? Is this, do you actually want to read this stuff? Yeah. And like, I think you do. And so Sam knows, because I call her frustrated sometimes.
Yeah.
We're fighting to get more of these titles. We're fighting to get more creators in, like, and they are listening. Yeah. But it's just like the movement is just a bit slower than everybody wants it. But like, if you guys all speak up and say what you want, it's going to happen, for sure.
Vote with your dollar, vote with your feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
know?
Yeah. Both of those things are very important. And as somebody mentioned earlier, talking to the creator with positive feedback goes a really long way in terms of, like, getting good content. Like, if there's someone you like, write them a nice email or tweet them something nice, because that might get you another volume of that series, like, literally. Yeah. There are a lot of creators who said, like, there was one fan at one point when I was in a dark place, and it, like, just pulled me through. And it's like, two sentences can get you another volume of that. And then the companies especially, I mean, even independent artists, but that dollar is very important. So if there's something you don't like, don't buy it to hate read it. You know what I mean? Like take that dollar and spend it on something that you want to see more of.
Unless it's Batgirl. Definitely hate
Batgirl. Yeah, I got you. Another question? Yeah, in the back.
I have a question about when you're drawing the female characters, how do you decide what proportions to use for her body? And what does the female audience respond to? Is it like, draw a Barbie doll shaped character, the female audience won't like it, or actually are we all kind of sexist at heart? As a society, do like women actually buy more comics where the female characters look like strippers?
That's a good question. I will let you. I think Sam, you might have a good, and also Sandra. Keep in mind also that we have been marketed one thing for a very long time. So as you say things where it's like, women will buy it, like, will women buy it more because they, you know, they have a certain body type or whatever, there's a lot that we've been sort of brainwashed into thinking is what we all want. Yeah. So it's not, it's a combination of, like, that's all we got, and at the same time we were told that's what we want.
Yeah, the answer to your question is yes, we're all sexist. Yes, we are. Everybody has, like, haven't we all been in that place where we're like, I'm not like other girls? We've all been there, like, whatever, it's cool, we learned to get over it. I mean, in my opinion as a consumer, I can only speak to that, but I don't like buying Cheesecake comics. They're like, Gail Simone right now is doing Sword of Soros, which is really awesome, but I find myself really turned off by that comic because I can't get past the art. That's why I like Batgirl, that's why I like Squirrel Girl and stuff like that, so I don't know, that's me, but you guys actually draw, so...
I have three main characters. The one Susan, I don't want to say she's frumpy, but you know, she's a mom and she's had kids and she doesn't have the perfect figure. And then I have the Maeve character who has a very good figure. I mean, she's into fitness. And then I have the Kim character she's in good shape, but it's not like she's really hot or she's not overweight. And then I have a Helen character who is like a secondary character, and she's a full-figured woman, but she's very pretty. I think she's pretty, and I really like her character. She's no nonsense. She's very self-confident, and it's funny how these characters, they sort of write themselves. But I have been doing my strip for 4 years on my own, and then another 21 years with my syndicate. And in all that time, I have never ever written a diet gag for the full-figured woman.
Yeah.
We're all sexist from no fault of our own, I guess. This is the axiom that has been overlaid onto our brains, and it is our fault for when we realize that it's there if we do nothing to remove it. And I've mentioned at the beginning when I realized that, you know, this existed in my mind, this thing that I felt didn't belong, I took great care to try and remove it. It is a difficult thing to disattach because it's just so entrenched. Body shapes was one of the things. When I look back at my early drawings, and I was basically copying what I was seeing in the media, which is, you know, the hourglass figure, you know, ample endowments up there. That was the template presented to me as, you know, of a successful character. So that is what I drew for a long time, until, again, I started realizing that that did not represent what I wanted to see, really, myself. And, like, I've always been just stick-thin through high school, like, unhealthily so. And it wasn't because I dieted or anything. I couldn't keep any weight on. And that's kind of reflected in my main characters, instinctively, I guess, because, like I said, I write for myself. So my main characters tend to be a reflection of that. But I have taken great care with reflecting all body shapes, you know, popularity be damned, because that is the world. And strangely enough, like, when I was drawing, it's like, I'm going to draw a girl who's full body and beautiful and confident in herself and, you know, forget all the naysayers. And when the book came out, like, the amount of people came up, you know, thank you for putting different body shapes into your comic. Like, how refreshing to see. And like, oh, okay, all right. So, I am aware of it when I draw. And, again, I put a lot of thought into the way that I design my characters.
And you think of the cosplayers, you know, like, yeah. And the same way that you said they could write out a book, oh, I have the same name as the main character of this book suddenly, like, mm-hmm. There are people with my name, they're like, you know, cosplay is a really big thing, and even though, you know, the industry and the community is trying to encourage cosplay whatever you want, your body type be damned, there are people out there who see that, and they're like, oh my god, I could do that costume because that person looks like me, mm-hmm. You know, like, just this kind of representational thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, I was just going to say, I'm an animator professionally, and you know, there's a way that you have to draw the female characters, the way they're storyboarded, the way they're designed, the way, you know, the role they play in the story. There's always, you know, there's everybody else, and then there's the sexy one who inevitably is the woman. And, you know, it was just this enormous relief for me to draw women in my own comic that were just there, you know. Yeah. Their bodies are functional, and they sort of slouch around, you know. And I kind of had my revenge. I offloaded all the sexiness. The sexy one in my comic is a dude, you know. So I have some female gaze going on, you know. it was a little bit of vengeance there. Because, I mean, from my own professional life, I got heartily sick of, you know, the camera was always staged in a certain way, you know. So, you know, you're having to look at the woman, in a subjectivifying way. When it was my own thing completely, it was just awesome just to draw the woman just there being yourself.
I love to keep using the word freeing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, your world is what you want it to be, you know, and this is partially how you change the industry, right? Like,
you guys
the change you want to be. Oh, yeah.
You have, like, respectable characters and, like, a girl with a hijab in Batgirl.
I will say that. Yeah, like, we, Babs has done a great job kind of filling out the world of Burnside, but she does really like to draw sexy people, males and females. And I have had friends of mine take issue with, you know that scene where all the girlfriends go to the art gallery?
Yeah.
And they're all in a line together?
I love that shot. That's the shot I was thinking of when I was thinking the WC.
I know, but my friend was like, what's with the thigh gap? Every one of those ladies is the thigh gap, and I was like, "Oh my god, I didn't even." And that's got. It's like that's our female illustrator. I don't know. That's her.
Yeah.
That's how she sees.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just, and you know, it's something that we all talk about. But
yeah.
She comes from a place of drawing illustrations, and it's always like sexy ladies.
Right. Makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know. There's so many ways to look at it, and she's, you know, we're trying to represent in as much of a realistic way as possible, but ultimately it's like a high fantasy superhero comic, and it comes back to making really slick artwork and making it look cool, and that just happened. I'm not saying negative or positive, it's just there.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh my god, I had no idea.
Yeah, I thought that shot was really cool because you had like all the girls were different colors. You had one girl who had like the braces because she's disabled, and I was like, man, I want that in all my comics, like, but I did not notice the side yet, so there you go.
Yeah, not perfectly realistic. Yeah, it's a drawing, and it's never going to be perfectly realistic, and we just try. Everybody's just trying as hard as they can, and we're all learning, all screwing up and all learning, and just trying to make the best, fun, awesome artwork that we can.
That poison just seeps through when you least expect it.
Yeah, there you go.
It's really, it's not, it's like, it's so hard to see it because it's so entrenched.
Yeah.
Oh my god, can we have one final fun question?
Well, it's 5:03. Nobody's after us.
Can I play dance music or something?
Does anybody have anything to add?
What's your favorite comics character?
Sam?
Do you have a year?
Oh. Sailor Moon.
Yeah. Straight up. Oh, I don't want to start. I don't know.
Nausicaa.
Yeah.
Sorry. So predictable. I'm sorry. You're all going to go and look at my comics and go, oh, yeah. I see it. I see it.
Lifted and clicked.
Yeah.
My favorite comic is The Runaways, and my favorite character from that is Nico Minoru, who's like this witch girl. Because she, like, I was like an angry goth teenager too, and I wish I had been like a blood mage.
Gosh, I guess I'm going to date myself here and say my formative comic was probably The New Mutants during the Chris Claremont run. And that was some awesome female characters all over the place in that comic.
Bill Sienkiewicz?
Yeah.
That was epic.
I don't know all these comics. this is not really the right answer, but I'm going to say one of my favorite cartoonists woman is Marjan Satrapi. And my favorite book that I think I have all of hers, but my favorite book that she did was Embroideries, where the women are all having tea and talking. And I love that book so much, I won't even put it in my bookcase. I have it in plastic in my dresser drawer because I don't want it ruined.